Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcast. You are listening to STC Podcast Episode 10. Today we hear from Stephen French, Principal System Engineer with the Samba team and Primary Data, as he presents Linux SMB3 and PNFS from the 2015 Storage Developer Conference.
Okay, so today I'd like to talk about SMB3 and the newest versions of NFS, NFS version 4.2, and some of the new layouts that have been proposed for PNFS. As I said, I've been involved in development of NAS stuff since early years at IBM on both NFS and SMB. And I found this very interesting, meeting Dr. Barry Feigenbaum, who in 1984, as a young PhD student, was inventing some of the stuff while others at Sun were inventing the NFS stuff. So why are we here, right? This is how many years later? 30 years later? This is very interesting stuff that we've evolved and improved so much over these years. I maintain the Linux SIFS client. One of my coworkers, Tron, maintains the Linux NFS client. The SIFS client allows you to access SMB3 servers. You know, obviously you've seen this. This is a Mac, right? In making this presentation, had to use my code to get stuff back and forth to the Mac. But also, obviously, I think all of you are aware of Windows and the enormous amount of very exciting things that Windows has done with SMB3. But first, we should talk a little bit about NAS. Many of you guys were here at the presentation right before this. The presentation right before this was about iSCSI, ICER, right? This is not NAS, right? So why do we care about NAS? And why do we care about these old 31-year-old protocols? So we have some questions we have to address first. And to answer those, we kind of have to, like, why do we care about file systems? Well, it's over 50 years, right? Remember Multics? I don't think any of you guys were around then, right? The amount of unstructured data is staggering. Now, I have kids. I have three kids, different ages, college down to 14 years old. The amount of unstructured data they create each day is frightening. And I think any of you guys, you know, if you look at their laptops, will be sort of startled how much of that stuff is created. So this is just staggering amount. And NAS does very well. But all of this stuff, whether you're using NAS or not, depends at some level on file systems. You know, your Facebook, Google, whatever, that stuff gets stored on file systems. When you go to conferences like Vault, or I enjoyed going to the Linux File System Summit again the last few years, it's really interesting to hear the kind of challenges in file systems that still 50-something years later we're struggling with. But why do we care about NAS instead of SAN? You know, I'm prejudiced. I've been doing this for a long time. But you know, the ownership information, the better security, it's easier to set up. I mean, most of us don't want to deal with LUNs. Most of us don't want to deal with configuring some of the bizarre stuff you have to for SAN. And then you get this application access info stuff, this patterns that you can optimize. In NFS, you know, the metadata patterns you can use to do really cool things. And some of the things that you know, NetApp and EMC and companies like mine, Primary Data, are doing, trying to understand how to move data around. This is a lot easier when you actually see the access patterns. And of course, nice features like encryption and compression. You know, I'm sure the guys in the cloud want everything encrypted, right? I mean, this is a lot easier on NAS than it is on SAN. And policy setting is easier. I borrowed this slide here from, you can see the link below for more information. But it's just amazing how much unstructured file system related stuff, even in the internet, how much of that's getting sent in NAS backends. But then the obvious question is, why Linux, right? Okay, I've got a Mac here. I work on Linux. We got Windows people out there. We have people from multiple NAS vendors. But why do we talk about Linux? Well, 90,000 change sets last year. 90,000. This is not one line change, right? 90,000 sets of changes. That's huge. Now, the development pace looks like it's going up slightly, not going down for Linux. So it's fun when I go to the Linux File System Summit and meet a lot of these developers. Very bright guys. Ted So, Christoph Helwig, others. It's a really talented community. Now, if you just look at the file system, over 5,000 changes in the last year. This is just the file system. Over 1,000 just in the last point release, right? 4.2, over 1,000. So we have almost 1 million lines of file system code, which is very deceptive. Linux is incredibly terse. People send me patches every month. Remove this, clean up this, use this helper function. They add some helper function, shrink 10 lines of code. It's very terse code, and yet still quite large. You know, over 1,200 developers per release. That's a big community, lots of people, lots of eyes, and good processes and tools. And of course, look at all those file systems. And you know, here's a picture. I'm buried in there somewhere. But you know, this is just the file system experts and MM experts. That's a really talented group. So why Linux? Obviously, we have a very talented group. Now, what are the most active things we do in Linux? Well, surprise, surprise, it's NAS is really high up there. So the majority of file system activity in Linux is driven by 6 file systems. There they are. And guess what? NFS server, NFS client, SIFS are up there, top 6. And, you know, we have a ButterFS talk. I think that just went on, is actually going on right now. That is the most active file system and has been for a number of years. So many people diss ButterFS because it's still evolving. But ButterFS is getting a lot of love, a lot of activity. EXT4, as well known as it is, gets less than XFS. So it's interesting to see where the actual activity has been going on year after year. NFS server, NFS client, SIFS, ButterFS, XFS, and EXT4. Interestingly, the NFS server activity, largely driven by Jeff Layton and others in my company, but also a couple others, recently the NFS server activity over the last year and a half has skyrocketed, has increased a lot. Bruce Fields has a nice presentation, a Red Hat server lead for NFS, has a good presentation on that from the Vault conference this year. They can talk about some of the NFS server improvements. So we've had more than 30 year of improvements, impressive protocols. I think you all are running a variety of laptops and devices. NFS or SMB is available on most or all of them. The NAS servers support both. You know, they'll support both. They're very well tested. They're understood reasonably well. And of course, they're more common than all of the cluster and other network file systems combined. So really, we're down to NFS v3 versus, sorry, NFS v4 dot something versus SMB3. So what do we have? Our current kernel. This is, the VMs here are running 4.3 RC1. You know, I run, when I do my presentations and testing, I typically am running, you know, this is 2 weeks old, right? A week old, 4.3 RC1 kernel. 13 months ago, we had a shuffling zombie juror, for those of you who like John Grisham novels. But that was 3.16. You know, it's kind of cool to look at performance. I get kind of excited looking at this stuff because it seems like, you know, even after many years of doing this, you can still be surprised. You know, SMB3 is quite fast. Jeff Layton a few years ago and Pavel Shalovsky also 2 years ago and last year did some really good stuff for increasing SMB3 performance. But in addition, there are some nice SMB3 features, multi-crediting and you know, the larger I/O sizes that really help Linux in certain very easy to understand, very common workloads. And large write performance. Here's a very simple example. So these are VMs on this box. I just ran these last night. SMB3 averaged more than 25% faster than SIFS. I did a loopback to eliminate network effects because obviously on a low-end laptop, I'm not going to have a really fast network adapter. For those of you in Mellanox and Chelsea and others, you can try their, you know, very, very fast network adapters and replicate this stuff. But running loopback and running on VMs on the same box allowed me to eliminate sort of network hardware deficiencies on a laptop. But I mean, you can see that SMB3 was significantly faster, both reads and writes. And you know, Unix extensions help on SIFS because it allows us to do larger IOs. But even with Unix extensions, SMB3 is faster than SIFS with Unix extensions. Unfortunately, the Linux client doesn't support RDMA yet. So we don't get the benefit of that offload. We do get some wonderful network effects and send file, but we don't get the RDMA advantages. And that's work in progress, and we'd love some patches, and we have lots of good developers out here who want to submit patches. We would very happily finish up the RDMA work. Okay, so what's the status of SMB3 optional features? Security features look pretty good. The downgrade attack stuff that was added in SMB2.1 is there. The SMB3.1 negotiate contexts are there. We can mount with SMB3.1.1, which is the dialect Windows 10 ships, but it's really not complete in the sense that there are some security features that aren't finished for that. You know, it only works in some use cases for SMB3.1.1. So we do recommend that you mount SMB3 or SMB3.0.2. We don't do per-share encryption yet. That's something that I want to finish up this week, if possible. There was also some good blog entries that that Edgar on the Microsoft support team did on some of these features that we're gonna leverage to finish that up. Also, there are some SIFS features that we have that have not been merged into the SMB3. When you mount with SMB3, aren't enabled. For example, KRB5, being able to use the SPNego KRB5 negotiation works for SIFS, but for SMB3, it's not tunneled through. And also, yes, and that's Jim McDonough, by the way, the SUSE guy, and I would love to finish that this week because these are not big changes, but as all of you know, Linux is driven by a set of a different model than everything else. It's kind of the squeaky whatever gets the grease thing, right? So if a vendor comes with something they need, we can review it, we do it. But a lot of these things, that KRB5 stuff that Jim was mentioning, are not big issues to finish up. But they are important for some workloads. Now, claims-based ACLs, another good example. Adding an ioctl to do, you know, the claims-based ACL set and get would be useful. We have this for rich ACLs, the SIFS ACLs. But most of the key security features are in. On the data integrity side, we don't have persistent handle support. We do have durable handle support. Recovery is pretty good. We don't have all the clustering features, though. So some of these things like persistent handles, you know, there's been a prototype of the witness protocol for Samba user space client. When that is done, that makes more sense to tie all that together into a complete clustering story. Performance actually looks pretty good. We have two different mechanisms for fast server-side copy, the copy chunk, as well as the new block ref counting that REFS supports. We have both of those in. We have the duplicate extents thing is actually very interesting because the performance is just staggering on that to REFS. Very, very impressive. We don't have the T10 style of copy offload. That could be added. We don't have multi-channel, although it's close. We talked about RDMA. There are some really neat little things that SMB gives you. We have an we can set compression on a file. Okay, you can do that in some file systems on Linux, but it's still kind of neat to be able to do, you know, change adder and set compression. You can set integrity, right? Windows has this concept of you want to mark a file as needing extra integrity. We got an ioctl to set integrity across the wire. You want to mark certain files as more, you know, higher levels of RAID or whatever, go for it. So it's kind of neat to see some of these rich sets of features and how to expose them in Linux. Okay, so what about NFS v4.2? Now on this, I'm going to steal some stuff from Alex McDonald's pitch and also from Bruce Fields, the Red Hat server lead. But Alex has a very good SNIA talk that you guys can Google and find from a few months ago summarizing the NFS 4.2. So I do recommend go to the SNIA site, find Alex's talk on NFS 4.2. But basically there are three major layout types, file, block, and object. The NFS client on Linux supports all of them. The kernel server only has support for block as a 4.0 kernel. Layout stats, available in 4.2. Flex files, usable starting in. Flex files is the kind of thing that a lot of our guys in my company work on, Trond and Tom Haynes. It's the newest layout type, a successor or follow-on to files layout. That was added in 4.2 kernel, so this is in the last year. Oh, sorry, 4.0 kernel. Sparse files, support for sparse files was added in 3.18, space reservation in 3.19. Labeled NFS was added, I think, for the Red Hat guys to allow SE Linux on NFS. Interestingly, those xAdders are really the only xAdders that you see supported, although there is an RFC that Mark Eschel and some others at IBM Almaden have proposed to add xAdder support for NFS. So you can go on the IETF site and see that. But they do at least support the security labeled as of 3.11 kernel. So there are other 4.2 features, though, that Linux Client does not support. IOAdvise, allowing you to notify your access patterns. And copy offload. To copy offload, there are patches out there. There's been some good discussion on this. Some of it's waiting on a true syscall interface. What we have in SMB3 is for the block ref counting, the RAFS style, the CP command dash dash reflink can do it. For the other style, the copy chunk, there's an ioctl for that. NFS, we have patches, obviously, for this in NFS, but these aren't merged yet. Also, application data holes are not in. And Christoph Hellwig has proposed a new SCSI file layout, and you can go read the RFC on that. But there's a draft RFC for that, a new layout type that's been proposed. As you can see, a good chunk of the 4.2 features are in. And I do strongly recommend that nobody mount with NFS 4.0, at least mount with 4.1 if you're going to mount with, NFS v3 is fine, but 4.1 or later. There's no real reason that I can see to ever mount with 4.0. And, obviously in Linux you can use 4.2. Okay, so what about these layout types? File layout is obviously most common. NetApp and others have supported it for a long time. Now we have flex files, and if you want a really good presentation on this at Connectathon, Tom Haynes has one, so I have references at the end of the talk if you guys want to go get more details on this. There are at least two implementations of object out there that I'm aware of, and then block. But in block, I'll be very curious to see how Christoph's new SCSI layout is received. With flex files, we have some really neat new features. So I'm kind of curious with the SCSI layout versus the block layout, how that's going to play out. Okay, so what is flex files? It's the successor to the files layout. It allows you to integrate real servers. Now, I think all of you guys have NFS v3 servers somewhere. And the rollout of NFS 4.1 servers has been surprisingly slow. So there's a ton of data out on NFS v3 servers, or even v4 servers. There are a lot of OSs out there, a lot of Unixes that didn't really support 4.1 very well, didn't support PNFS at all. So how do you use all of these servers? Well, one thing that's really nice about flex files is your data can sit on legacy servers. It's kind of a nice feature. It'd be like, in SMB3, we could have the data sitting on old SIFS NAS boxes that were, we'd already paid for, but our metadata was stored on SMB3. So it also allows you to, for clustered file systems, Ceph and Gluster, it's kind of an interesting, it allows you to export clustered data a little bit better in some cases. But I think there's some really interesting things that we're gonna understand better in another year or two how well this works, but I think it's gonna work really well. One is, in some cases, it's better to have the client doing the mirroring than the server doing the mirroring. This would allow you to stripe data differently and allows the client, the server gives the layout to the client and tells the client which servers to write to. That's an option. Also, it lets you do SLAs, these service level agreements, and set management policy. Moving data more easily is one of the things, a theme we're seeing a lot in storage now. Making balancing and tiering decisions in your metadata server and letting the client spray the data where you tell it to. And then, of course, we have this concept of fencing where you can order the client to basically give the layout back and then you move it to somewhere where it's faster or better. So it's a really interesting thing, separating metadata and data, allowing spraying I/O across a large number of servers from one client. That's not a concept we have an exact match for in SMB. Here's a picture of it from Alex's talk. Once again, I do recommend you take a look at this to get more data. It mentions a little bit about fencing. As you can see, the concept of a metadata server and multiple data servers, where you have basically the client given a layout, and then the client can report back to, a really neat concept, the client can report back to the server some of the statistics and things like that, so the server can make better decisions about where to move data. So these layout stats and layout errors are very useful in allowing allowing you to very gracefully move data where it belongs. Anyway, the concept of flex files, I think, is very, very good. But there are other areas where SMB3 obviously is more terse and efficient and better. And even with flex files, of course, SMB3 is a much broader protocol than NFS. But let's just look at some of the comparison points. Okay, current dialects, 4.2 versus 3.1.1. Obviously, NFS is more POSIX compatible. Richard Sharp and others have done some nice little prototype patches for Unix extensions for SMB3, but advisory byte range locking and unlinked delete behavior are more POSIX compliant over NFS. I mean, the vast majority of things are POSIX compliant, either on SMB3 or NFS, but there are some glaring examples here where emulation only gets you so far. There is no equivalent of PNFS on SMB3. And obviously, I don't want to underestimate the difference of layered versus non-layered. SMB3 talks directly to TCP. NFS is encapsulated in some RPC. This has effects on what you can do. It makes it a little harder to tune NFS. Also, there's no exact equivalent of labeled NFS, the SE Linux security labels. We can do xadders, but not the security type of xadders. We do the user type xadders in SMB. And conversely, NFS doesn't do the user type adders. It does only the SE Linux type. Okay, so what about SMB3? We have a global namespace. Well, Chuck Lever and others at Oracle have made proposals for global namespace for NFS. But what we have in SMB 3.1.1, and actually all the way back into SIFS, we have a nice global namespace, very usable, very commonly used as DFS. Claims-based ACLs don't have an exact equivalent of NFS. Obviously, the file replication, witness protocol, there's no exact equivalent to these. There are other protocols you can use for some of these same purposes. You can run rsync over NFS, right? But tightly coupled or better coupled to the protocol are a large set of useful features. All of the DC RPC management stuff, for example. And I think it's fair to say, even with Tom Talpe here, that the SMB3 RDMA learned from NFS RDMA, did some useful things, right? So we've improved, or SMB3 RDMA is, has features that NFS RDMA doesn't have. And also, multi-channel is very useful, right? Multi-channel allows you to move your network I/O on the fly. It's not exactly, PNFS, you can do some of that, but it's not really the same thing. Being able to change the number of network adapters on the fly and which ones you're using is a very powerful feature. And I think you're going to find that the multi-crediting and the I/O dispatching is a little cleaner in SMB3. So what about performance? I did some tests on the plane. I did some tests this morning even. And actually, it kind of startled me. I wanted to add this slide at the last minute. And I expected to see a slight difference in NFS and SMB3 performance. I got a much bigger difference than I expected. So once again, this laptop running Ubuntu and RHEL VMs, tried various combinations. I tried the simplest example I could. Let's just use the DD command, large block sizes. Simulate a big file copy. Nothing fancy. This is just reads and writes. Open the file, read it, and write it. Separate test cases. DD input file from dev 0. In the other case, I'm outputting to dev null. So I'm taking the disk mostly out of this, and I'm taking the network mostly out of it because I'm running either loopback or running VMs on the same host. So I'm just trying to look at the protocol. And it was much bigger difference than I expected. So for writes, now remember this laptop is running other things, but I have two mounts, mount and mount one. One NFS, I tried V3, V4, V4.1, and tried SMB3. The server is Samba 4.3. Samba 4.3 has been out for a few weeks now. and a nice stable thing. I've been running for a while. The server is either the NFS 4.1 or the NFS, sorry, the NFS kernel server from 4.1 or the NFS kernel server from 4.3 RC1. So the most current kernel server versus user space Samba. Interesting, look at this. 1.1 gigabytes per second versus 700 meg per second when writing. Reading, the gap was smaller, but still, even reading, SMB3 was faster. I use the default. So these are defaults. So this is, I mean, please try your own experiments too, because I mean, this was just quick and dirty. I just wanted to use the defaults. I used a default SMB conf from RHEL. I used a default, I guess the server file system isn't actually going to matter much, but it's going to be EXT4 in both of these. The R size is the default. So Linux defaults to 1 megabyte R size, NFS defaults to 512. But even with 512, it actually seems to fall back to 256K. So NFS R size and W size is smaller by default. But there's other factors than just the R size and W size. It's very interesting to look at. So something to play around with. And I'm not saying that NFS is faster or slower in general, because clearly there are workloads where NFS is much faster. But this was an easy to understand one when you're trying to look at a Wireshark trace and talk to a whole bunch of people. Just large reads, large writes, DD. Now, if I took two VMs instead of loopback, so here I'm writing, you know, 20 meg blocks, just, you know, 400 meg file. And by the way, larger files, you can see the same kind of thing. SMB3 was more than 3 times faster. Now, reads was closer, but even reads, you got 150, was it 50% faster for reads? Now, why? If you look at the Wireshark traces, there's two things that are really obvious. The I/O size is, R size is larger for SMB. Interesting though, increasing that to, let's say, 4 meg, to Samba, reality is it didn't make much difference beyond about 2 meg, and even 1 meg was about the same. Actually got a little bit worse when the R size got larger for Samba. For Windows, I don't think that would be the case. So the default 1 meg R size was actually pretty good for SMB3. There are many, many fewer TCP requests, probably less fragmentation going on. But what was also fascinating was, you know, Jeff Layton and others had done a fantastic job improving parallelism in the NFS kernel server, but it doesn't help this workload. So what you see is, you know, because of the slot count and various dispatch things, you see chunks of NFS responses sent all at once and holding up a whole bunch of stuff. So you see groups of 8 or 16, sometimes responses sent at one time. So if you look at the Wireshark traces, you'll see a more graceful dispatching of requests in the SMB3 case. Now realize that that's to the Linux kernel server. There are plenty of you guys out there with your own NAS servers that might see slightly different access patterns. But I think it was interesting to see sort of the client-generated stuff where you just sort of the fragmentation and these sorts of things. And, you know, multi-credit helps. Large I/O sizes help. And obviously, we should even be doing larger I/O than this. You know, 8 meg should be the default. Now, what about other things? Copy offload. Copy offload is huge. It's in SMB3. It's not in the NFS client yet, although it's coming. You can see the patches out there. The lease model, allowing lease downgrades and upgrades, I think is a big help for SMB3. And obviously, multi-channel. But many, many, many workloads are faster on NFS where they can take advantage of PNFS and spraying I/O across a large number of servers. So let's not forget that. You know, flex files, for example. Okay, so let's talk about work in progress on SMB3. We have a lot of testing focus. We have this week, hopefully, not just, as Jim was saying, the KRv5 stuff, but there's a couple of punch hole fallocate bugs that need to be fixed. And obviously, if we can hammer out with Richard Sharp and others his prototype of the Unix extensions, that'd be a great timing. Okay, POSIX compatibility. We have a big problem that we talked about at the Microsoft Plugfest in some detail, SMB deprecation. And with old SMB SIFS deprecation, we need to move to SMB3 POSIX extensions quickly, because today we rely on, heck, we'll just use the SIFS mount because we'll get POSIX compatibility then. But full POSIX compatibility requires that, you know, it's at least good enough, that an SMB3 is better than SIFS for, or at least equal for everything, not a step bar. You know, POSIX API is complex. There's a lot of stuff. And, you know, we really need to be, well, we need to be very aware of how rich this API is. And, you know, I put in bold here some of the things that are very important, the case-sensitive file mapping, the POSIX locking, renaming and delete of open files. We have emulation for some of these, but, you know, it's very important. And being able to return the POSIX info, the mode, and the UID, GID owner saves round trips, right? Because a lot of metadata-heavy operations are easier on NFS because you're not having to go query the ACL to go pull out the UID or whatever. Okay. The proposed POSIX capabilities that that were in these patches are here. Basically, flags that allow you to negotiate these capabilities. And just to give some details about POSIX compatibility, SMB3 can do hard links. It can do the reserved characters and POSIX path links. It can do sim links, mounting with the Apple style MF sim links. It can do FIFOs, pipes, character devices. It can partially do extended attributes. It can, these are the Linux extended attributes, so strictly speaking, not POSIX. It can do POSIX stat and statfs, but there are a couple fields that are emulated. And POSIX byte range locks are emulated. We can't do the SE Linux labeled NFS kind of stuff, the security flavor of xadders. We can't do the POSIX mode bits except by sticking them in an ACL. That's very interesting, by the way, to look at Andreas's patches over the last 6 months for rich ACLs in Linux, because you can obviously pull the mode bits out of a rich ACL. But once again, it is cleaner to be able to return it in one operation. We can do UID and GID ownership mapping today, but it's a mapping. We're not returning the actual Unix UID. Okay. So here are some steps that we're going to be working on this week, for example. Here's some example. Maybe we can look at this in a, you know, after the presentation. But some examples. You can see creating sim links. You can see using special, you can see some of the bizarre characters that are used. It's kind of fun looking at what some of these characters look like when you actually look at them locally instead of over the network. So like an asterisk, these are the Microsoft Apple style Unicode mappings for these reserved characters. So you add, you know, basically they're above Fox 000. But if you look at these mapped characters locally, they're a little odd. In any case, over the network, you know, an Apple client or a Linux client will happily see them. And, you know, Samba will happily store them. I just found it kind of odd to see these, what they actually look like locally. So these give you an information about, you know, the actual mounts I was doing here and the mount options. And, you know, you can see here, again, the stat command and the statfs command. And, you know, the ls command. And you can see the difference between a local and a network mount. But we get very, very close. POSIX simulation isn't bad. So what other features are we looking at? Obviously, ACL support, improved ACL support for SMB3. One of the things we looked at is stream support, how to list streams. We had patches for doing that over iOctals, for example, or do we want to do a different way? Linux error handling is pretty good for SIFS, but there are a lot of corner cases in error handling. And so one of them that we've been looking at is the persistent and durable handle cases, recovering pending byte range locks, making sure we do that perfectly. We talked about the xadder cases. Okay, what about release by release? So some of this is useful reference maybe for later for you guys. If you're curious, I've got a particular version of the Linux kernel. Does it have a fix? This summarizes sort of by release the changes. But to give you an idea of some of the more recent ones, The MF symlinks were added in 3.18. This allows for emulated symlinks to a Windows server, for example, from Linux client. The POSIX reserve character stuff we talked about. And then there were some bugs in the Mac client with the way they handled the SIFS Unix extension. So when you mount with the default SIFS, some of those were in 3.18. 3.19, there was a much improved fallocate support. Some of these aren't even in NFS, some of these features. Let's see. 4.2 added the 3.1.1 dialect negotiation, added the duplicate extent so you can do cp --reflink to RAFS. And that, 1,000 times faster copy if the files are both on the same mount on the server. Also added an ioctl for get and set integrity. So if you want to make a particular file on that mount, get better data integrity, that get and set integrity ioctl is there. And in 4.3, we just made a very useful bug fix that I had to use yesterday. It's kind of funny. There's a time zone problem with Mac server, where if your time zone is off by 2 hours, and for those of you who run VMs, it's very frequent that your time will drift more than 2 hours. So in any case, there's a fix for working around the Mac OS mount problem when your server and client's time clocks have drifted too far. That was actually useful to me yesterday. Wonderful things about Linux. You benefit from other people's work. And of course, the most important thing, we have 4 days, and not just Jim McDonough, but any of you guys here, please find fixes, help me, let's get these things in. We really want to get these improvements and any bug fixes that, I know that there's a fairly large backlog of things that need to be closed out and bug fixes. And we want to clean that up so we don't have any worries about any, there's a lot of NAS servers. One of the things that I, after many years of doing this, I think it's very hard to underestimate. There are so many server bugs to work around, or server features to work around. So, and then lots of client bugs too. Lots of client bugs. But it's fascinating, there's probably 10 separate server implementations here, at least. You'd be amazed how many bugs to work around that creates. SIFSUtils, there's some work going on right now on maybe adding some improved statistics gathering for these and adding some extra new utilities. This is an area that is very easy to make improvements in because, for example, just this last release, we added an ioctl that allows you to query the information on a mount. And we had to do some of this so we could detect, hey, is it RAFS? Does it support block ref counting? Does it support these features? There's a lot of features that are returned about the file system and the device on the server, and some of these are matter. We now have kernel tools to do it, but not the user space tools to make it pretty. Okay, some practical tips. Consider using SFU and MF symlinks mount options if you're mounting with SMB3. Use verse equals 2.1 or later. Don't bother with SMB2. Just go straight to 2.1 or later. You might as well, like these Macs that I have, support SMB3. Mount with SMB3. For higher performance, especially to Windows, you might increase the R size and W size beyond its default of 1 meg. Obviously, this won't help you with SIFS, but with SMB2.1 and later, try the larger than 1 meg. It didn't help in my test to Samba, but I think it would to Windows. And I don't know about to Mac. I should have experimented with Mac. Obviously, case sensitivity can cause problems. One of the things that drives me crazy is if I want to do a kernel build on SIFS, works fine to Samba because we have case sensitivity. The number one personal pain point is I can't do a build because you have files that have in the Linux kernel build that have the same name, different case. So that's an example where it can be painful, like doing a kernel build. Okay, so SMB3 support is very solid. Pretty well tested. I'm not very worried. It's missing some key features. We've talked about those key features. The default will change to SMB3. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about doing that in SIFSUtils very soon. Love feedback on that. We obviously, this week, are going to continue to do XFS tests, continue to do testing against various devices. I'd like to do more, especially against other NAS devices that I don't have at home, that I don't have in the office. We have a page out there with the XFS test status. In Linux, the file systems have moved to basically one pocket XFS test that includes everything. XFS test. There's hundreds of tests, and here are some of the ones that cause problems. And many of these also have problems on NFS as well, usually because of timestamp issues, client and server, mTime stuff that's really hard to do in a network file system that really only makes sense in a local file system. But there are some FLocate issues as well buried in there. But the big picture I want to leave here, NFS 4.2 is actually very exciting. SMB 3.1.1 is very exciting. These are very interesting protocols. There are workloads, even Linux to Linux, where SMB 3 is better. There are workloads probably even, you know, to SMB-centric NAS, where NFS is a little bit better. But generally, between the two of them, there's so much breadth of workloads you can cover. And the features that have been added, nobody implements all the features in both protocols, in one protocol, much less both. But they're very interesting protocols. I think you were just mentioning, right, that nobody really understands the implications of some of these cool features. Async operations, just async operations. The ability to do cool things in your server while you're waiting for operations to be pending. There is a lot of optimization still to be done on both the server and client side in both protocols. But the big picture is that these help real workloads. It's not just, you know, casually storing PDF files from your presentation at SNIA. These are things like Facebook. These are things like big NAS boxes in the back end of cloud. And I'm very excited as you see more of this integrated into private cloud. But I do want to encourage you guys this week, do more testing, more patches, more bugs. Let's make this much better, both for NFS as well as for SMB3. I think we've got a couple minutes for questions, so I'd be happy to have some questions.
Like when it comes to SMB3, can you give an idea of what's the interaction of Microsoft and the Linux community?
That's a very good question. He asked, for SMB3, what's the interaction between Microsoft and the Linux community? Now, there's two parts of this, right? One is the Samba side, where we have both server and a huge set of tools. And Microsoft has been very active with the Samba team for many years in using some of the tools to help debug our servers and vice versa. On the kernel side, though, they've contributed directly. I mean, I got a patch. There's a patch in 4.2 from Microsoft. So Microsoft has, from time to time, contributed patches. They found some stuff doing network boot of Linux. Kind of neat. Found a bug. Unfortunately, their server responded faster than... The server responded before the request was processed. Does that make sense? So when you have a really fast server and it responds before the request was sent, so that was painful. In any case, that was an example. So Microsoft has contributed patches. I think largely the interaction that I've had has been testing and asking crazy questions to Tom Talpe and others about things I see. On the other hand, clearly Microsoft is evolving, and great question to ask these guys because Microsoft guys are here. But in any case, I think it's been a very good relationship on the Samba side as well as on the Linux side. You're seeing Microsoft testing things and we test with them regularly. Many of us, test 2-3 times a year with Microsoft guys. Go ahead.
Pointing out at 5:30 this afternoon, the SMB3 Plugfest is open to everybody to come through and look. You'll see a large number of people doing SMB implementations, many of them on Linux. Not all of them are Samba. Some of them are available from third-party people, licensing, and
yep. Yeah, so as SW noted, 5:30, we have the Plugfest is open. And a very important thing you noted is that although in my talk I focused obviously on Samba server and NFS kernel server because they're common and well understood, there are other servers as well, Ganesha, open source, user space server, and lots of closed source servers, even on Linux. We've spent a lot of time talking about the open source ones. In any case, I think it's been very... I've enjoyed very much being able to interact well with the Microsoft guys, because seeing these two operating systems interact, one common thread I see is we both have some surprisingly similar problems to deal with, even with operating systems as diverse as Linux and Windows. And as a client developer, you know, this is just fun. It's like horror stories, sharing the horror. Okay, question back there. You'll see extended attribute support in NFS? Yes. Okay. So let me answer it three ways. One is we already have it in some way, because they do have these subset of the security ones. And in another sense, there are named attributes in NFS already. Linux client doesn't expose many. So in theory, you could expose some named attributes already. But the bigger picture is Mark Eschel and another IBM colleague of his at IBM Almaden have an RFC draft, and I really don't know much I can say other than I don't know personally what the reaction in the NFS standards community is to that draft, but that would add support for X-adders. Personally, what I struggle with a little bit is that there are Linux-specific security attributes that I'd like to put on the wire, to Samba at least, that are a little tricky for me to. So I have the reverse problem, right, is that I can do user attributes, but I'd like to be able to do others. Okay, so Tom, did you have a question?
I did. You didn't mention Linux client support for multi-channel and RDMA. Do you have anything to add on those?
So his question was Linux support for multi-channel and RDMA. So RDMA support depends to some extent on multi-channel. Tom gave some fantastic suggestions a few months ago on how to stage that work. So this is very important stuff to do for Linux, because right now, to get RDMA support in, which may be useful, by the way, not just in, you know, multi-$1,000 adapters, but in some of the commodity workloads as well, we need to finish multi-channel. And only the first couple steps of multi-channel are done. There were patches that I worked on back in June that got a little bit farther, but they got kind of dropped on the floor because of work stuff that I was doing unrelated to the Linux client. One of the things I would like to do, if there's time this week, is maybe make some progress with that. But it's an area where we would eagerly want to finish, right, is finishing the multi-channel support in the Linux client off would allow us to better balance workload and allow the server to adjust much better to changing network configurations. But it also allows you to advertise RDMA. And RDMA, there are a number of cases, not just the high-end Mellanox cards, where this is useful. And I think, you know, all of you guys for the last 3 or 4 years have probably seen Microsoft's spectacular demos of what multi-channel gives you. So I would like to see that. But no development progress really since June or July.
I don't recall in a previous slide if you specifically addressed SMB3 encryption.
Yes, I talked briefly about SMB3 encryption. So the question was, did I address SMB3 encryption? So SMB3 encryption, the layering makes it easier than it sounds to do in the Linux client, because the signing layer and the way things are, the way the protocol implementation for the transport layer in the sys.ko makes it fairly easy to do encryption, other than the technical obstacles of, you know, making sure you got the keys correct and all that stuff. We got partway through that with Edgar, back in the summer, but haven't worked on it since. So one of the things I'd like to look at this week to finish up if we can. So SMB3 encryption is extremely useful if you don't trust your network. You know, all of you guys love to hear NSA stories and spy, you know, whatever spying stories, but it really is helpful. SMB encryption is really powerful because it allows you on a particular share, a particular export, to say, this data matters. I want this encrypted. No, this doesn't have to be encrypted. So that's kind of a neat feature. And most other things force you to encrypt everything. And obviously IPsec and other are very hard to set up. So SMB3 encryption is relatively easy Windows to Windows to set up. And I think even the Mac supports it, right? So it is something that's fairly high on our priority list, but is not finished. OK, so I would welcome, let me make sure we're out of time here. Yeah, we're about out of time. I'll be outside and also be at the Plugfest and welcome additional questions. But I do want to encourage you guys to, SW, get a question.
Yeah, one more thing. I noticed a lot of people are taking photos of the screen, et cetera. We welcome that. But the slides are posted. Steve may have forgotten to update them to the as presented version, but I'm sure he'll be doing that later.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a developer conference. We never actually come in getting the slides done on time. But
yep.
We do expect you to post them afterwards. They're available. We have the program.
Yeah, these are as of an hour ago, so these have been updated. The slides are up there, but about 20% have changed. So I found some really fun stuff on the plane. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snea.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit storagedeveloper.org.